Conversations with Joan Lewis.
Well, Joan, here we go again.
You know, in looking back at the news to prepare for today's show, at least in overview, it was a very, very quiet week. And actually, what did the Pope, what was he involved in directly? It was only two things with the public, and that was the Angelus and yesterday's general audience. There was a telegram for the death of an Italian soldier and something like that. But actually, the Pope's actual appearances being with the public were only those two events. And I thought that was rather noteworthy. I must say, if I recall, if memory serves me correctly, before John Paul went on a trip, there'd be a huge flurry of activity. Documents going out and meetings here and there and heads of state and whatever came across his desk. And it was like, you know, you got this impression, does he think he's not going to return from a trip? And then after a trip, there would be a couple of days of relative, you know, quiet, preparing for the future, I guess, recharging your battery. So maybe that's Benedict's way of doing things too. And again, he's older to start with than John Paul was at the beginning of his pontificate. But there were a couple of interesting things actually on the agenda this week, and I will dedicate a little more time to a longer, more interesting question and answer that I have that you know about. But two interesting things in the Vatican really were, as the whole planet knows, the World Cup began in Germany. The World Cup soccer football champion began in Germany on June 9th. And just a day before the start of the Soccer Cup, we had Archbishop Agostino Marchetto, who's from the Pontifical Council for Pastoral Care of Migrants and Itinerant Peoples, if you will. And he denounced reports that had been flowing out from various sources that 40,000 women, mostly from like Southeastern Europe and Eastern European countries, would be brought to Germany for the month-long games to work as prostitutes. And he said, you know, I mean, this is nothing other than a modern form of slavery. And he said, to use what are football terms, I'd like to hand out a few red cards to the customers, to the sports industry, and to public authorities. And of course, red cards for those six or seven people who are not familiar with soccer. Red cards are used in football, or soccer as it's called in the United States, to expel a player for a game when they've committed a serious foul, violent conduct, or used offensive or insulting language. So that's what he meant when he said he'd like to give out red cards. And he said, and it's so true, prostitution violates the dignity of a human person. And women have just become market commodities for so many who can be bought at the cost of a ticket to a game. And it's very interesting because...
Well, it's very sad that they've been imported.
Oh,
just...
Yeah.
For the World Cup, and then exported out afterwards.
Exactly.
They've just become a commodity.
That's the surest sign. I'm glad you brought that up, because that's the surest sign that they're a commodity. Okay, we're bringing you in, use you, and then, send you home. So it's very, very sad. You have to...
Well, it's like hiring a PA system.
Sure. It really is, and I rightfully so. The reason, really, that the Archbishop denounced it, I mean, anybody, obviously, in the Vatican could have and should have, but his council has approached this question at other times, because they have treated in a number of international meetings that they go to the question of sex tourism. And as a matter of fact, the very last time they did it was at the 6th World Congress for the Pastoral Care of Tourism, which was held in Bangkok, Thailand in 2004. And we know there is an awful lot of sex tourism in Bangkok too. So that was a very interesting message. And in a way, maybe it was good that it was a very quiet week, because the Archbishop's message, instead of getting lost maybe among a lot of other messages or events in the week, I mean, it was noticed by a lot of the world's press, in particular secular press. And then on June 9th, we said, of course, when the World Cup began, on that day there was another message. It was from Cardinal Angelo Sodano, of course, Secretary of State, to participants in the 36th General Assembly of the Organization of American States. And that had closed, that meeting, just a few days earlier. But he did send a message in the Pope's name, so I guess we can say the Pope did have something else on his agenda that week, which focused on the dignity of human beings and the absolute value of human life from conception to natural end. And the essence of the message, to distill it in a few words, was that he was talking to member states of a continent that was known for such a long time, a long tradition, as he said, of respecting life. And now pressure is being put by different groups on the populace of the various Latin American countries that are actions, opinions, contrary to what the Church has always taught about defending life and protecting and promoting the family, of course, based on marriage between a man and a woman. And then the cardinal did bring out the fact that he said another priority is to favor conditions that reduce violence. This all has to do with human dignity, that reduces violence in its various forms: terrorism, attacks on innocent civilians, and attacks on the family. So a very important message, and those were the big things out of the Vatican, except, of course, the Vatican did release the Pope's schedule for his trip to Spain. He's going to Valencia in July 8 and 9 to conclude the 5th World Meeting of Families. And I guess the whole world, or certainly the Vatican and Spain, better pray that Italy and or Spain are not in the finals of the World Cup. We will begin our talk and end our talk on the World Cup because it's being played on July 9th, which is, of course, actually it'll probably be played in the evening and the Pope's Mass to conclude the 5th World Meeting of Families will take place in the morning. He'll be back in Rome safely. He either leaves or arrives at 3:30. So he's going to meet, interestingly enough, just one little parenthesis, the Pope will meet with the King and Queen of Spain. He will go to the City Hall to meet them. He will also meet with the Prime Minister, but the Prime Minister is going to have to come to the Pope. And he will be, I think, at the Nunciature at that time. And, of course, you've got a lot of problems between friction between the government and the Church since Zapatero's election, simply because of, you know, the promotion of same-sex unions, the problems that are linked with the, you have a country, Spain, 42 million people, 39.5 million are Catholics. And so, you know, you've got this government approving a law on same-sex marriages, making it easier for Spaniards to divorce, and his government scrapped plans by the previous government to make religion classes obligatory in schools. And sadly enough, the same time of the Pope's presence in Spain, the Prime Minister has given permission for a gay and lesbian group to organize a meeting on the family. So,
and they're going to be in the same area as the meeting on the family.
It's really sad.
Yeah. And now for our question.
This question came from a listener who emailed from the page, which many of you know that the webpage no longer exists. Let me just tell you right now, if you have a question, the email address is joanknows@gmail.com. So this question came to that from the internet page previously, who a woman has a 13-year-old son who wants to attend Catholic school. She's thrilled. He was baptized in her husband's family church, a congregational Armenian church, had his first Holy Communion in New York at St. Patrick's Church Catholic, which accepted this congregational baptism. The school, Catholic school he wants to attend in California, is not accepting the baptism. She thought all Catholic churches followed the same set of rules. Is that not correct? And I had a theologian, because it's not my expertise, I had a theologian answer this, and he said the answer would depend on the specifics of the baptism. Unless there's a reason to doubt validity, the baptism of mainstream Protestant churches is accepted by the Church. If there is a doubt, the pastor can ask how it was performed. If it was performed by pouring water on the head or by immersion or with the Trinitarian formula, it is then valid. So then this theologian listed a couple of possibilities that could be, should we call it, a deviation of that format. If it took place, the baptism, in a church whose theology is not Christian, and which therefore, even with water and the Trinitarian form, would not have the Orthodox Christian meaning. So that would be a possibility. Make sure your pastor knows the precise circumstances of the baptism. I won't go into all of the possibilities just for time constraints, but the woman to whom I'm speaking today should find out the reason why the second priest that she talked to says the baptism is not valid. What is his reason? And then she should go and get the answer to his possible reason or objection. And then, interestingly enough, he said, if there is a legitimate concern about validity, the boy should be conditionally baptized. So I will send our listener from California, who can't hear the show right now, and so I will be sending you, if a friend of yours is listening, shall we say, I will send this answer also via email. But keep them coming. JoanKnows@gmail.com.
And until next week, thank you, Joan.